As a founder, you get to pick the parts of your business you're great at and make them into your ultimate competitive advantage. Welcome to the Founder-Led Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell, a 4 times founder and 3 times sales leader with 3 exits. On this show, we'll be diving into the stories of founders who followed their passion and led their business from 0 to 1 million and beyond. All right, welcome back to another episode of Founder-Led. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell, and today I've got Joe DeCina on. He is a New York Times best-selling author of Spartan Up. He was also an entrepreneur before he could spell the word and transformed from Wall Street trader to fitness vend. So, Joe, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome. Really pumped up to have you. Learn a little bit more about your story. I saved some of the other things here as we kind of jump in. But what kind of got you started on the fitness trend before you started Spartan?
Mom. Back in the 1970s, my mom's mom got sick. She had cancer. My mother was walking into a health food store to try to figure out a way to save her mother. There was a yogi in there. There was incense burning. And the yogi introduced this idea of yoga and meditation and becoming vegan and getting rid of the sausage and peppers and not eating cannolis and not smoking cigarettes. And so my mother somehow bought into it. Imagine back then, no Lululemon, no yoga journals. This was all new stuff. She brings these ideas home. They are not met with open arms at all because we like our cannolis. We like, right? We love the lifestyle we were leading back then. I was a little kid, but parents got divorced, and that yogi eventually started a race called the Transcendence Run. My mother started long distance running. It was a 3,100 mile race around a 1 mile loop. Still exists today, 50 to 60 days of running. And so that was my introduction to this insanity back then and normalcy now.
Mm. And so did you just kind of follow in her footsteps, or you just like, you know, everybody's lifestyle kind of transitioned as your mother's did?
No, I pushed back heavily. Everybody pushed back. Did not want to live with my mom. Wanted to get back to the neighborhood. Wanted to be around tough guys and eggplant parmesan heroes. But eventually I ended up, you know, graduating college, went to Wall Street, had a moment there. While on Wall Street, felt very unhealthy. And that's when I said, oh, you know what? Maybe my mom was onto something. And I went and did a hot yoga class. I started running. I started doing these crazy races around the world. And I was like, oh my God, she was right. I was wrong. We were wrong. All of us.
And was there like a breaking point moment for you where it kind of shifted?
Just the feeling I had coming out of a 90-minute, 100-plus degree hot yoga class, just how I felt, just, you know, the feeling I had doing a 3 or 4 hour adventure race with sunlight, like getting off the trading desk, getting out of a room off of a chair. I felt so good that I was addicted to it. I recently had my brain checked, and they looked at my brain and they said, are you addicted to opioids? And I said, I've never taken a drug in my life. I don't drink. And I realized I'm addicted to this stuff. I'm addicted to the healthy stuff. Like, I'm addicted to working out and action, but I created that. And so, yeah, it was the feeling I got doing hard things that changed everything.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to dig into that a little bit. You said they take a look at your brain and asked you if you, tell me more about that. Like, what did they find? What was going on in your brain?
Well, yeah. So a buddy of mine runs a company called Nestre, N-E-S-T-R-E, and he's able to put a cap on your skull and very quickly see, you know, what your brain looks like, the same way you and I would look at our biceps or a six pack in a mirror. And so that was the comment they had looking at my brain. And I said, well, I'm definitely addicted to work. I'm definitely addicted to working out. I'm definitely addicted to doing hard stuff. So that's probably what they're saying.
Mm, interesting. Interesting. And tell me a little bit about the transition from Wall Street to entrepreneurship.
It was It was actually in reverse. It was, I was, you know, when I was very young in the neighborhood, as my parents were getting divorced, my neighbor was the head of the banana organized crime family, and he saw the stuff going on in my family. He said, why don't you come over and clean my swimming pool? I was very young. I was not even a teenager. And I went over his house, and he taught me some lessons in business. And before you know it, he gave me two more customers. And I had the head of the Lucchese crime family. I did the Gotti's swimming pool, and I became friends and a service provider to 700 of these clients over time. So that was my first foray into business. And it was awesome. And I had to learn how to do electrical work and plumbing work. And I had to understand chemistry. And I had to do a good job. Otherwise, they'd not only stop using me, they could kill me, right? There was lots of tension there in running that business. But I learned how to communicate really well. I learned how to do the basic functions of any business. And eventually sold that business and went on to Wall Street, where I built another business. I built a business on Wall Street.
Interesting. What are some of the lessons you were taught early on, cleaning that first pool?
Well, even before cleaning that first pool, my dad taught me something that's really stuck with me in business, which is when you meet someone, even you and I meeting right now, always be thinking about how you can add value to that person's life. A lot of people, my dad used to say, they have their hand out. They're looking to find value and gain value from the relationship. You should do the reverse. You should figure out how to add value to their life. It's like putting money in the bank, he would say, Joseph. And then that first customer, the head of the banana organized crime family, he sat me down. For whatever reason, people just love giving me advice, which is great. Maybe it's because I listen as opposed to talk. I don't know. And he said, all right, number one, on time is late. If you're going to show up at 8 a.m., if you're supposed to be there at 8 a.m. on the job, you better be here at 7:45. He said, number two, you got to go above and beyond. If I'm paying you to clean the pool, you should also straighten up the shed, clean the lawn furniture, clean the windows. You're not getting paid for that, but go above and beyond. And then number three, never ask for money, which I thought was bizarre because the whole reason I was getting into this business and doing this job was to get paid. But his point was, if you're asking for money before you provide, you know, a value, a service that the customer can't live without, it's easy for the customer to get rid of you. But if you do an unbelievable job, they will pay you. They will figure out a way to take care of you to not lose you. So don't go in with your hand out. Very similar to what my dad was saying, right, in relationships. Mm-hmm. Go in with your hand down. And it's really, it's very hard. Even in our current business at Spartan, I say all the time to my team, you know, who cares? That person doesn't have the money to raise. Give them a free ticket. That new brand doesn't have the money to be a partner with ours at one of our races. They want to be a sponsor. Just let them in. That's a brand we like anyway. They're serving healthy food. It's a very tough thing for a human being to reconcile. I don't understand. How can we give it away for free? Then we're charged. Like, who cares? It works out in the end. I mean, people can't take advantage of us because at some point we'll shut it off. But we could be really good human beings and take care of people, and then they'll take care of us.
Yeah, it's a concept that people don't often think aligns with, you know, running a profitable business, right? But no. You found a way to where it works, right? And it comes back around.
Well, no, I'm glad you mentioned that profitable business. So it's funny. We just read, somebody said to me, hey, do you know this guy? He just put a really negative comment towards you on social media. And I try not to look at the comments because, you know, 50% of the people are going to be negative. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe their cat got run over. Who knows what's going on? And they end up saying things that they don't really mean. And they're a little more, human beings are a little more aggressive, I would imagine, behind the curtain of social media. But anyway, I don't even know who the person is, investigated a little bit and dug into what they said. And I realized, you know, the challenge is if you haven't run a business or you're not managing a business for someone, you might not understand that it does have to be sustainable. It's got to, at the very minimum, it's got to have the same amount of money coming in as that's going out. I know it sounds juvenile for me to say, but there are people, I think, that just don't understand that. Well, I can't believe this business is raising its prices and charging. So, okay, well, one answer to that is we could be raising prices because we just want to be more profitable, and we're building a castle in the Bahamas. Another answer to that is we have more expensive payroll. Trucking costs went up. Insurance costs went up. You know, inflation that individuals feel in their home are not unique to individuals. Companies are experiencing the same thing. So if their input costs go up, well, they have to charge more. But that infuriates some consumers that don't understand that. That's just the reality. And so, or can't believe you let go of those people, and you know, you fired 30 people out of your, from your, well, we have 550 people globally, and we grow, and every year you have to trim that back. If you don't trim that back, you spend more than you bring. Like, so
yeah,
I'm being silly, and but it's the reality. It's the shitty reality of running a business. Do I wish that the Department of Defense would recognize the value we create in this country and other countries and subsidize our business so that we can give free tickets to every? Of course. I would love that. I love, love changing lives. That is the currency I get paid in. But I also have to make sure we have at least the same amount of money coming in as we do going out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, right? Because before we hit record, you know, I asked you what's one of the things you love talking about most, and without hesitation, your first response was changing kids' lives. So tell me more about that. You know, what does that mean to you, and how are you guys doing that today?
Well, I think we believe that we can change our life by reading a book, by listening to a podcast, by going to a seminar. And I'm sure that does happen sometimes, but the reality is to make a true change at scale, you've got to do something hard. Mm. You've got to do something hard. You've got to break up that relationship. You've got to go take that really scary new path down that road. You've got to do a 26-mile run. You've got to fast, take a cold shower. You've got to do hard things, because it's only when we're completely uncomfortable and we're feeling broken that we change. And we do that with kids. We have about 150,000 kids every year that do one of our events. And kids are amazing because they're still young, they're malleable. The changes that I just described are very, very profound under the age of 15 years old. The changes are profound for adults too, but it's not the same. An adult can quit. An adult has a car, probably has Netflix, has a couch, can escape the hard. The kid's in it. The kid doesn't have a license right now. The kid is stuck doing the hard thing, doesn't see a way out. It's actually more painful for the child because they don't have escape routes. They don't have a plan B. Shit, I just got to do this. And so over the years, I've been doing this 24 years, to watch the kids that we've introduced to these hard things develop as human beings and change and transform and go off to incredible careers or into the military or start business. Like, it's just, it's so rewarding for me, for the company, that when somebody asks, like you asked, like, what do you love doing? You know, I was at a cheese factory recently, and I looked around at all the employees, one of the largest cheese manufacturers in the world. And I thought, my God, I could be doing this. That would kind of suck. I could be making cheese all day. You know what I mean? Like, most jobs don't get the reward I'm describing. You don't get to see a child grow up that had no intention ever, let's say, of going into the military. And then I meet this young man at Fort Bragg who's now in the Special Forces. I remember him on the farm when he was a kid. And he had no intent, you know what I mean? Like, so really rewarding for me, for the company, to see those changes.
What is the kind of youngest age that you see kids, you know, pushing themselves to participate in your races?
Oh, you get 4 and 5 year olds come out if the parents bring them out. I mean, they're 4, 5, 10, 12, 13. We have a death camp we put on every summer. Terrible branding, but for some reason the kids get excited about it. There's a death camp every summer on our farm in Vermont. It's typically the last week or two of June. It'll happen this year. There's about 100 kids that come out, and that's like the Navy SEALs of what we do for kids. They are tortured every day, 14-hour days up and down the mountain, cold water early in the morning. They are getting in line. They're learning philosophy. They're memorizing man in the arena. They're learning about, you know, history, the Constitution, and sure enough, these kids just completely transform.
Yeah, and what are some of the things that are going on in these kids' lives that their parents think it's a good idea to send them to death camp?
Well, the problem is in our society and in any developed world, the elders become a little more well off, and so we remove the obstacles for the next generation, for our children, and we make it easier for them, and we give them more things, and we help them a little too much, and in doing so, we're actually crippling them. So when the kid becomes of age where the parent finally notices, oh my God, my kid is addicted to the phone or the device or eats too much junk food or doesn't listen, that's the culmination of what I just described that the parent was doing to the kid. Mm-hmm. The parent is the creator of that personality, of those actions. So they end up, you know, asking about death camp and bringing the kids. And what's really funny is the kids will be like crushing it, not complaining. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be embarrassed in front of the other kids there. And then all of a sudden, a mom will talk to their child through an iPad, and you'll see the kid just start crying. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling the mom, I said, 3 seconds ago, before, the kid was happy and running around, like, but they know that you are an escape route, that if they cry, that maybe you'll come get them out of here and they can get back to sitting on the couch and just playing with the iPad all day.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we have to do more work with the parents than we do with the kids.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I've got 4 kids myself.
So, there you go.
You know, it's one of the toughest. You know, I've founded 4 companies. I've sold 3 of them. But being a parent's one of the toughest challenges that I've experienced.
How old are the kiddos?
My youngest is 2, and then I have a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
I'm taking the 7 and 9. Plan on being in Vermont the last week of June.
For death camp?
Yeah, I want him at death camp.
Yeah.
Game changing. If your wife will go along with it, game changing.
Tell me a little bit more about, you know, kind of the business, right? You know, what have been some of the challenges? You know, you said you like tough stuff. So obviously, entrepreneurs, you're addicted to tough stuff, right? So obviously, entrepreneurship is probably a natural fit. But I'm sure you've experienced some challenges that have maybe, you know, been more than you thought you can handle as an entrepreneur. How do you work through those? What is, you know, some pieces of advice you have for other entrepreneurs?
This is definitely the world's toughest sport. Running a business is no joke. Being an employee is the way to go. Just collect your salary and smile. Yeah. I've got a lot of friends who have done wildly well working for someone, like ridiculous sums of money working for somebody, and then have gone out and tried the entrepreneurial thing and said to me, oh my God, why did I ever do this? You and I get it.
Yeah.
Right? Because I grew up in it. My father used to say, you got to have the stomach for it. I didn't understand what that meant. We are a 25-year-old overnight success. right? 24, 25 years ago, I started this thing. I could not make it work for the first 10 years. I could not get enough customers to come out and do hard things. I could not generate enough revenue to pay the bills, but I was making plenty of money. I was on Wall Street. I still had my foot, you know, there. And I was able to continue to try to make it work and pivot and change the name and try a different product and just kept playing with it. And finally in 2010, it started to work. It didn't work from a profitability standpoint, but it worked from a consumer participation standpoint. More and more consumers were now interested. So I knew we had something. Mm. We're still burning enormous amounts of cash. Again, people around me could not make sense of it. Why would you possibly do this? You're spending so much money. This is a disaster. But I knew if there were people coming in the door and there were people going across the finish line and they were smiling and they felt different and they looked at, I knew there was something, there was some way to make this work. So by 2015, now 15 years into it, we finally started making money. Who the hell would, who would last 15? No one.
Yeah.
People can't last 15 minutes. But I wasn't giving up on it. I was going to make it work no matter what. And it started to work in 2015. By 2019, we were on top of the world. We had bought out our competitor, Tough Mudder. We were getting into trail. We were getting to other things. It was incredible. COVID hit, and it stopped us in our tracks. Got shut down in 45 countries, couldn't pay bills, had to furlough 400 plus people. Absolute disaster. Anything that could go wrong went wrong. Customers wanted to burn me at the stake because 450,000 of them had bought a ticket that I could not deliver on. I couldn't put a race on. So I did what any honorable business person would do. I said, look, I'll give you two entries. You bought one ticket, I couldn't deliver on, I'll give you two. The world is gonna open up in 2 weeks. Once the world reopens, you'll have two entries. So I gave away $90 million worth of tickets. For us, the world did not open up in 2 weeks. It opened up 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And when it finally opened up, I didn't consider that, oh my God, we have to stand up 250 to 300 events at once. I gotta book 250, 300 venues at once, get insurance, hire back 400 people, get all the trucks rolling again. It was a massive, massive check that we had to write in order to get the machine going again. Oh, and Joe, don't forget the first $90 million in revenue you're not getting because you gave those tickets away for free. So to say it was a disaster would be an understatement. It'd be like walking in and having to box Mike Tyson as a 15-year-old. Like, it was ugly. And we should have quit. I could have easily declared bankruptcy. I could have easily wiped out all the bills, started over. The brand would have survived, but we didn't. The employees, myself, we dug in. The vendors were amazing. The customers were amazing. And this year, knock on wood, it's back on its feet. It's unfriggin' believable. We should not exist. We really shouldn't exist.
So there was plenty of opportunities in time where you should have just maybe thrown in the towel, but you didn't.
Well, the most obvious time to throw in the towel. I mean, there were 500 times every week I had to come up with payroll. We should have thrown in the towel, but the most obvious. I mean, we had countries and locales around the world allowing us to put on events. We would stand up the event. We would get the customers to buy tickets or use their free tickets. They would buy hotel rooms, buy flights, get all organized for the event. And the night before the event, the government would change their mind that we can't have the event. Like, it was bad enough that I had to cancel 300 events in 45. But then as we were opening up, they were canceling them 24 hours. Like, it was impossible to give people confidence that we were a trustworthy company. Like, But the pinnacle was when the Wall Street Journal called me and they wanted to do an article, which they did, on the cover of the bankruptcy section, that Joe wasn't paying his bills. Oh. That's a doozy. Like, here you are, you're trying to convince customers that you're doing the right thing, you change lives, they should buy tickets, they should trust you, and the Wall Street Journal decides they want to do an article because that's going to be helpful to the world somehow. Mm. right? That's a good time to quit.
Yeah. But you didn't.
But I didn't. We didn't. We said, I guess the God, you know, whoever God is, whoever you believe in, whoever the higher power is, decided that because I doled out 500 million burpees throughout all these years, he wants to get even with me. I don't know why they're doing this to me, but
yeah. I mean, how did you pull off scheduling all of those events, getting all your employees back, delivering on two entries, giving away basically 90 million in tickets to still be able to survive and be in business today?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. We just, every day it became easier for me to go to bed at night than to be awake. Like, you could easily see how, you know, some humans start taking drugs or start drinking or doing bad things to kind of ease the pain of the day. But there was so much pressure, internal, external, vendors calling, wanting to get paid. Like, there was so much pressure that I just go to bed early, deal with it tomorrow. You know, and if you just, it's a great case study. Like, if you just don't quit, you actually might get through it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like Shawshank Redemption, where he's crawling through that, you know, 1,100 foot pipe of sewage. And I just felt like, you know, at some point I'll get out of this thing.
I guess that's what you get for making so many people do tough stuff.
You know, it is, you know, we have a saying, you know, I hope you have a shitty day. And why would you hope that for somebody? Because that forces you to do the work. That forces you to tackle the tough stuff. It makes you more resilient. So yeah, you could take the easy route, right? You could take the job, you could make your life easy, but you're not growing in that instance. You're not becoming more resilient. You're not creating a great, look at the great story I just got to tell. And life is all about the stories. So, you know, nobody would talk about Shackleton if he wasn't stuck in the ice for 2 years with his men and had to eat the dogs, right? Nobody would talk about Sir Edmund Hillary climbing Mount Everest if it was easy and there was no snow that day.
Or he decided to quit.
Or he decided to quit. So,
yeah.
Not that we're not doing all this so people talk about it. It's just, stories are fun.
Yeah.
You know?
So, what's next for you, for Spartan, and anything exciting that you have going on we can share with folks?
You know, I'm toying with the idea of, you know, maybe in the next 2-3 years of going public. I mean, the brand is 2,500 years old. We somehow survived what I'll call a locust storm, right? COVID. Like, it was just like we survived it. And so, you know, and we've got 50 some odd thousand Spartan tattoos on people out there somewhere in the world. I think it's a cool brand to maybe do a small public offering. And, you know, not that I need the headache of a public company, but what do? We want to change 100 million lives. And to do that, we need more exposure. We need to be bigger. We need to go wider. So, yeah, I think that's the next big frontier for us.
And clearly, Joe DeCina needs his next tough thing to take on.
We need another tough thing. The water's not cold enough.
Yeah. Well, Joe, it's been awesome having you on the show. Really appreciate it. Where's the best place for people to find the book, find out more about Spartan, or anything else you guys have going on?
Yeah, just go to joedecina.com or find me on Instagram at @realjoedecina. Shoot me an email, joe@spartan.com. I answer emails. Please don't make it more than two sentences. And you can always reach out. Where are you physically located?
I'm in the Bay Area in California.
California. So you should find a Tough Mudder or a Spartan event of ours. And you should bring 100, 200 of your closest friends, or actually listeners or viewers of your show. You could set up a tent. It's all on us. I'd love for you to bring out your tribe. And there's no better way. You know, I built a lot of businesses myself, as we talked about. There's no better way to build your business, no better way than to use something hard to energize your community, internal and external community. And it's on me, so there's no reason you shouldn't do it. And if you're nervous about it, you're like, Joe's going to have me electrocuted and crawling under. Yes, I am. But you're going to be doing it with people that you want to get close to or you're already close to. It's game changing. It's not like golf. It's not like doing dinners or going out for drinks. It is, you'll energize your whole community.
Yeah, so. I love that. I'm definitely going to take you up on that. Joe, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. We'll drop all the links there in the show notes to make it easy. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please connect with Joe, check out Spartan, look for something tough to do for yourself and share the show with your friends and write us a review.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Founder Led Podcast. If you got value on today's show, please share the show with your friends, write us a review, and we have more for you. If you want to make sure that you never miss an episode, that you get access to our weekly newsletter and all of the downloadable guides that we have, like 50 top discovery questions for founder-led sellers, or the entire go-to-market playbook to scale from zero to 5 million in ARR, make sure you go over to colinmitchell.com. That's where you can find the newsletter, these downloadable guides, and make sure that you never miss an episode of the Founder-Led Podcast.